You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 12 November. We've got the medium-term budget policy statement, 2 p.m. today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks. Storage results, great results, but they trade at NAV. We'll touch on that. And then Robex, that's going back to Monday. I thought maybe a little disappointing, but maybe I was. Let's see what Chantal says. We've got Premier Group CEO, strong numbers. They're getting significant operational efficiencies. And then Sean Kelly, Mag 7 to Mag 70, and the ever-growing list. We'll dig into that. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, security firm Fidelity plans IPO. Banks will work on the plan to bring the 69,000 strong company to list on the JSE. Business Day, nearly a quarter of SA's workforce holds informal jobs. After revisions, Stats SA says 4 million people are employed in the informal economy. Morning markets, yes, was mixed. S&P was up 0.25%. The Nasdaq was down almost 0.33%. The East is mostly green, exception is Sydney, down 0.2%. We've got Tokyo up 0.25%. Hong Kong, 0.33% higher, and Tencent a little under 1% higher. Commodities mostly red, gold futures 4,125. Brent is green at 6501. Platinum 1,597. And palladium, actually flat, 1,463. The rand is 17.16. Bitcoin, 103,200. And top 40 opening call, 29 points, 30 points to the green. Call that flat.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning storage results, a stock I hold. I quite like the numbers. UK may be a little light, but they South Africa looking good. The only critique I would perhaps have is it's trading pretty much at net asset value, which would suggest to me maybe fully priced. Your thoughts on what is a nice little niche a REIT on our market?
Well, I think if we look at valuation and you consider the rest of the REITs, it obviously looks a little bit more on the expensive side. Mm-hmm. But you said the word niche. It's completely different relative to the rest of the REITs. So it's a really nice portfolio diversifier and property exposure diversifier because it doesn't behave like the others. In fact, there's a counter-cyclical element to it as well. Mm. Death, divorce, disaster, storage does well. So, I think that it still looks okay from a valuation perspective. If you look at some of the other storage operators globally, it's very varied. We have some of them trading at up to 3x NAV. Yeah. We have some of them trading at a discount. So I think at NAV feels okay to me. You've got a 7% forward distribution yield on this stock. The distributable income per share is expected to grow by between 5 and 6%. That's above inflation in South Africa. So, 7% yield growing at between 5 and 6%, I think is pretty decent.
Yeah, now I take your point. And it is, I mean, it's still weird. I still struggle. 6% is above inflation, well above inflation. I'm still used to big inflation numbers. There's a new reality out there. Let's touch on Robex. These numbers came out Monday. HEPS was down. I appreciate that. They're kind of locally there at the beck and call of SANRAL, which is one of our more efficient state-owned enterprises. They've also got Australian operations. Your thought on the numbers?
Yes, I mean, if you look at just the roads and earthworks business and the infrastructure businesses, which is kind of core Raubex, it's also old school Raubex, construction materials as well, performing really, really well. I was very impressed by order book momentum that we're seeing, particularly in roads and earthworks. And even though order book momentum slowed in infrastructure, they've been announced as the preferred bidder for the Lebombo border post. And we know how big Bait Bridge was for Raubex. So it could be a really nice kind of sweetener over the next few years if they get that contract. Australia, not so young and free, Simon. it's difficult to do business there. And it's very difficult for a construction company because there's these constant contract disputes. They're always checking each other out. No one trusts each other. It's always an arbitration. So that's been something that they're struggling with. And then the chrome and PGM business, it's cyclical. And at the moment with chrome, it's not in their favor. And that could change. So I think that looking at the core operations, I'm very comfortable. The stock looks cheap as chips. Yes, I just wish they weren't in Australia. I don't know what to say about construction in Australia anymore.
Well, except to your point, I suppose, and the answer is stay away. But I take your point. And to be clear, I mean, Sanrail's an efficient SEO, but imagine if we had, 3% growth and a lot more government spend. I mean, they've got what's the word I'm looking for? Good opportunity out there if we can start getting this growth going. Companies like Robex are going to do way better.
Absolutely. And we always talk about the last man standing narrative in the construction sector. I mean, we've only got two major listed construction companies left. Avengers isn't a construction company in South Africa anymore. So you've got WBHO and you've got Raubex. And they are going to have the balance sheets and the capacity to take on mega projects. And we've heard the stories about South Africa being turned into a construction site. Sunrail seems to be delivering so far. But if the rest come to the party and we get that growth tailwind that you speak about, I think that these guys are going to be clear winners.
We'll leave it there. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. On our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Back to the storage story. Is there value here? I text from Chantal's point. It might not be sort of trading at discounts, but it is a niche and it is that death, divorce, disaster, which happens all the time. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Kobus Reppenbach, CEO of Premier Group. Results for 6 months ending September. Revenue up 6.4%. HEPS up 27.9% and a dividend, interim dividend, R1.59. Kobus, appreciate the time. A strong set of operational numbers. Your operating profit margin up a full percent to 10.7. We'll dig into some of the details of where you picked up that extra 100 basis points. I mean, what sort of target do you think is reasonable for Premier Group in terms of an operating margin at group level?
Look, I think that we certainly don't target a specific operating margin per se. You know, we've got lots of plans and investments and things that we do. And we really try and focus on what we need to do in order to grow our EBITDA into double digits, which then after depreciation gives you a little bit further lift on your earnings before interest and taxes. And then by the time you get to earnings per share, we try to get as close as we can to 20% level. And I think, you know, this was another 6 months period where all the plans and the investments and everything that we'd made has actually worked in our favor and has given us the performance that we've shown.
Yeah, and a lot of this, I mean, to your point, absolutely. This is perhaps more than anything is around operational efficiencies and constantly improving those efficiencies.
Yes, I think that, you know, the massive amounts of capital that we've deployed in increasing the scale and efficiency of our core manufacturing capability is really what has continued to drive our performance. You know, and one looks at the last 6 months in isolation, but, you know, it's more than a 10-year journey that we've been on. And we've probably over the last 15 years now gotten close to investing 7 billion rand in building out our manufacturing capacity and capability. And, you know, those investments have really paid off. You know, one doesn't just put a new machine in and then day one switch it on and suddenly you make double the profit. It's a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication and focus. And then over time, if you continue to chip away at it, then the momentum builds. And I think that's what we've benefited from.
And your latest large project is the mega bakery that you've got on track for mid-November, so a couple of days' time, phase two for February 2026. That is part of that process. And this is going to be a fairly significant deal for Premier.
Yes, this, I guess, southern Gauteng market is the last area in the country where we haven't really deployed that type of technology. You know, we've been on an investment program, as I said, over more than a decade. And to now finally get into this part of the market where we can also deploy the efficiencies, but also the product quality that we have given consumers everywhere else in the country, I think we're very excited about that. You know, we have three very old subscale bakeries that were will finally be able to consolidate into this facility as it starts up. And I think consumers will definitely in this market will see a difference in the quality of the bread that they'll buy from us.
Staying with Millbake, how are your input costs doing? Because of course there's something which you have a lot less control over. How are they over the period?
Well, I think the big benefit for the consumer in this period has been the significant reduction in raw maize prices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, raw maize on SAFEX have come down by over 30%. And our sales price out to the consumers have declined by over 30% over mm-hmm. the last year. So we've certainly, you know, I think it's a very competitive market with multiple players, with multiple brands. And, you know, the competitive forces to remain competitive in that space has really worked as a capital market should function, and it has given the consumer the benefit of that lower grain as the country has had good rain season and we've had a good mm-hmm. harvest. And a very similar trend has happened in rice globally, and same type of or very similar type of reduction in the price of rice to the consumers has also been pushed through. So those deflationary pressures has been quite strong in sort of keeping our revenue growth very low versus a continuing drive on the profitability side.
Yeah, and so price decreases. And we saw it in the ShopRite update, they were talking September inflation, food inflation for their group was zero. The groceries and international, your sugar confectionery division, you had some challenges, but they seem to really be ironed out. It's doing well. You're also adding some product lines into Woolies.
Yes, we started to make all of Woolworths' own sugar confectionery ranges. That includes the chocolate and mm-hmm. all the gums and jellies and the licorice and everything else. It's over 150 products that we had to start making for Woolworths in the last 12 months. And, you know, in order to bed down those production processes, in order to sort out the exceptional quality that Woolworths demands from its suppliers and to get all of those things right is a mammoth task. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think our operations has coped very well, and we now find finally starting to see the benefit of all of that upfront investment to get that better down.
One of the top lines in the results was net finance costs down 28.7%, benefit of reduced debt levels. There is, and that to me, it just jumps out and says, you know, you've got that strong cash generation, and this is perhaps a core feature of your business.
Yes, we've continued to chip away at our debt that we had when we listed the business, and I think that's helped us. Obviously, we've had some reduction in interest rates in South Africa from the South African Reserve Bank that has also assisted us. And yeah, we've effectively just used the tailwinds that we had to drive down the interest expense for our business.
We'll leave it there. That's Kobus Hertenbach, CEO of Premier Group. Appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sean Kelly from Parity Wealth Managers. Sean, appreciate the time. Mag 7, that gets all the attention. Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, Nvidia, and Tesla. Although Tesla, maybe it should be Mag 6.5. But the bigger picture is you're talking around the Mag 70. What are you referring to when you say Mag 70?
Morning, Simon. Always great to be on. And you're right, you can't talk about markets today without mentioning AI and these so-called Magnificent 7 stocks. But I think the math is slightly off. Yes, mm-hmm. there are another 493 companies in the S&P. But if you unpack what sits inside that Mag 7, you're really looking at something closer to a Magnificent 70 in terms of their size relative to the S&P 500. And each of these firms is effectively a conglomerate with companies within those companies. Mm. And collectively, they've made more than 850 acquisitions. So when you buy one of these stocks, you're not just buying a single company, you're buying an entire ecosystem of other companies. And, you know, now we see that their combined market cap of the Mag 7 stands at around $22 trillion, which is larger than most GDP, you know, the GDP of most nations. But if we take like Google and Alphabet, for instance, it's completed roughly, you know, 250 acquisitions. And if we were to consider one of these companies like YouTube, it's estimated to be worth $400 to $500 billion, which would rank among the 20 largest listed companies in America if it were to spin out. And we see similar trends with the other Mag 7 companies. You know, Meta bought Instagram for $1 billion in 2012, and then WhatsApp for 22 a couple of years later. And these two companies now generate nearly $67 billion of annual revenue, which is around 40% of Meta's total. So when investors talk about market concentration, I think the risk is often overstated. Of course, these do trade as individual stocks. But if you reframe that discussion and call them the MAG 70, their collective weight makes far more sense and spans over multiple business sectors. Frankly, the bigger risk might not be owning them. But either way, these companies now look far more than just tech stocks.
But that's a really, really great point. I hadn't thought of that. And if we touch on Alphabet for a moment, I mean, they've got DoubleClick, right, which I think they bought some 20-odd years ago, and that dominates the ad space. YouTube, I mean, YouTube has more view hours on TV in the US than anything else. I mean, it's bigger than Netflix in terms of hours on TV sets. These are companies which, if they were on their own, would be significant players. They would be, you know, giant stocks worth hundreds of billions. And we kind of think, you know, Alphabet, oh, it's Google. It's not. I mean, there's Waymo in there as well. There's just a ton. And I like your thinking. These are conglomerates rather than single entity, which is perhaps a shift that I think maybe investors haven't fully appreciated that's happened over the last decade or two.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Simon. I mean, these, you know, they're not no longer straightforward, simply tech firms. They've become these multi-sector ecosystems. And, you know, to your point, take Alphabet. They have subsidiaries in there like Sidewalk Labs, which design smart city frameworks. You know, Meta has WhatsApp and Facebook Pay, which become, you know, a meaningful participant in global digital payments. Amazon has now expanded into healthcare. It's acquisition of One Medical, which now attempts to integrate clinics, telehealth, and patient records into consumer base. So, you know, all of this sort of adds up. Even Microsoft is building, you know, water positive data centers in Arizona and Sweden. And it just shows that their reach is now far beyond tech. Interestingly, if you look at like Bloomberg, Amazon appears in 8 different investment themes compared to an average of 1 for most S&P 500 constituents. So I think naturally investors are starting to ask, what is the primary, you know, industry these firms are focusing on?
Because they are tech. I mean, if you think Alphabet, sure. I mean, YouTube, sure. But actually, YouTube is probably media. I mean, I appreciate there's tech in the background, but it's actually media more than anything else. I mean, you know, WhatsApp is I mean, is a tech, yeah, but it's communications. These are less tech concentrated when we start to sort of pull them apart and look at them individually. They're back-ended into tech, but frankly, everything is these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, we see now that these so-called tech companies, you know, I suppose the biggest trend is what's happening with their CapEx and how they're all obviously piling into the, you know, capital expenditure boom. And we look now at the big five, they've spent over $100 billion in the third quarter alone, which is up 45% year on year. And it's all to compete around who can be, you know, the best and the biggest across these ecosystems. Microsoft has lifted its 2025 CapEx guidance from $93 billion, which is its third upward revision this year.
Yeah.
Meta's quarterly spend hit $19.4 billion, and its 2025 outlook now sits between $72 billion. And Amazon and Google Cloud show similar patterns with, you know, total hyperscaler outlay projects at roughly $340 billion this year. And today, these hyperscalers are allocating nearly 60% of their operating cash flow to CapEx, which is the highest we've seen on record. But one that maybe looks more like a digital infrastructure revolution than an AI arms race and a speculative bubble. But of course, now the question many investors are still asking, is it time to rotate out of these stocks? You know, it's the same one that many were respectfully asking 200% ago.
Well, that was going to be, so that then, I mean, and that's just it. I mean, you know, do we rotate out? Because, I mean, we could have made an argument to do that back at the beginning of the year, last year. I mean, the trend is still there. And it gets a little bit rocky. NVIDIA had a rough day yesterday on news that one of their holders was exiting, SoftBank, if I recall. But the momentum is my sense, is still there.
Absolutely. You know, if history is any guide, betting against the MAG 7 or perhaps the MAG 70 has really been a winning strategy. I think, you know, investors are facing a wall of worry and we need to go back to the basics. We need to look at the fundamentals. And as it stands, I think a lot of these companies are still showing, you know, extremely exceptional growth, exceptional cash flow. And our view going into next year is cautiously optimistic. We do think there might be a pullback, but probably a good time to buy in. And these Mag 70, Mag 7, the tech, you know, it's here to stay. It's going to be, you know, arguably better for the bottom 250 companies, where they actually AI might actually be a bigger, you know, a bigger advantage than the top 250 companies.
And Professor Scott Galloway talks often around one example, Alphabet. He said if you broke it up into its parts, it would have valuations multiple what it currently is. It all sort of fits together. Sean Kelly, Parity Wealth Managers, appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Petli Radenhuis yesterday at Herenia Capital. The AI boom and potential threat to valuations. We asked him, NVIDIA's results, is that is what keeping everything running? And of course, NVIDIA results next Wednesday after US close. Almost half of you said, nope, there's more froth. Third said, yes, they the king. The rest said, everything is fine here. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. The price of loyalty this Black Friday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.